The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesar Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesar Rewards. Must be 21 or older. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks a play fake is when mom throws a ball and then walks away. That's me. The guy who thinks that is Lenny. I am joined by friend of the show. Has been a while since he's been on. The Ringer's very own Shiuk Padia. Welcome back to the show.
It's good to be back. As I told you, the power went out just as I was supposed to sign on. So I feel like if I had to, you know, cancel this time, it would have been a very long time before I was invited back. So I'm glad I didn't waste your time.
Shiel, for those who don't know his work, I can't imagine many people listening to this don't know, but you can catch him on the Ringer NFL show. The Philly Special is the name of your, I'm sure, I laugh not because of the name, but because I can only imagine what that podcast is like these days. It's probably really fun if you're not an Eagles fan to listen to like a Schadenfreude experience. I feel like Eagles fans and Cowboys fans right now are experiencing like mutually assured destruction of Schadenfreude because they're enjoying in the downfall of the other team, but they're not able to gloat about their own, Shiel.
I've always said it's more fun to root against another team than to root for your own. Maybe that's my upbringing in Philadelphia and a very, sort of a negative environment, but I think it's true. You know, like for Eagles fans, that was so fun for them to watch the Cowboys. And then a day later, I'm sure the Cowboys fans felt the same way. So that's one of my sports truths. I think that applies.
Well, before we get to the weekend's games, the divisional round games, that is what we are here to do. We are here to preview what I think is an excellent slate. We know each other because you used to cover the Seahawks for ESPN. And I do want to get your quick take on not Pete leaving. I've talked through that, but sort of something that I'm trying to think through, which is what direction the franchise should go in for head coach. John Schneider just did their GM just had a press conference that I thought was like surprising that he did it. He was pretty transparent. I would say not so transparent as like, he didn't explain exactly why and who was behind Carroll's surprising ousting, but he talked a little bit about what they're looking for in a new head coach. And since then they have really widened their search. There have been reports coming in that they're interviewing just about everyone. So from the hot young coordinators, your Ben Johnsons, your Bobby Slowicks, I don't think they've interviewed Michael McDonald yet, but I'm sure they will, to the the longer tenured guys like Mike Vrabel, who's been associated with them, Dan Quinn in Dallas. It's a wide net. If you were the owner of the Seattle Seahawks, which of all of the names I mentioned and the ones I haven't do you think would be best to turn this team in the right direction?
Yeah, they're sort of in that middle ground, right? It's not a blow it up and start over. Yeah. It's also not a, I expect this team to win the, you know, compete for a Super Bowl next year. So I feel like any of those, like not like a, you know, a Belichick where it's, hey, the next 2 to 3 years, but I think you want someone who ideally will be around for a long time, who whatever direction this thing goes in a year, you'll be comfortable with. So I don't think they necessarily need a type. I don't think you need someone who's like in the Carroll mold to have the same culture. And I like that they're casting this wide net because I always, whenever you have a head coach opening, especially for a team like the Seahawks, where it's been so long, just talk to everybody, steal ideas. You don't know who's going to be available next year. So I don't know if they got someone like, you know, Mike McDonald and they said, hey, like, come on in. We're starting over and you're a great defensive mind. We haven't figured out the defense in 5 or 6 years. And let's go from there. Like, that would make a lot of sense to me. But, you know, you mentioned Vrabel. I'm like, I don't think that would make sense too. You know, so I actually have a lot of flexibility given the state of the franchise.
Yeah, I mean, I they haven't even interviewed him. I would love McDonald purely because I think the thing that's really been the downfall of this team in recent years, certainly this year, and will continue to be unless they can fix it, is the inability to stop the Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay offense. So you have to play 4 times a year. Mike McDonald just did that. You know, Dan Quinn did not. Dan Quinn has not. He's a great defensive coach, but he's not done that in Dallas. And I just don't know, as an owner, how you can look at that performance in the wild card game and then, you know, over the course of the regular season and feel good about your ability to rectify that issue, because that issue, it's not going away. Those coaches are still going to be there. Those offenses are still going to be there. And it's a real problem.
Yeah, it's a tough spot for Quinn because I do feel like part of his story in Dallas was that he did evolve. Like he's not running the exact same stuff he ran earlier. You know, their defense has had different looks. I feel like, I mean, talk about the worst timing, man, if you're Dan Quinn's agent or if you're Dan Quinn. But I don't know. Yeah, I wouldn't be like rule him out completely because he couldn't stop it. I mean, he's somebody who seemed pretty flexible. And I think he's actually a pretty good candidate for head coach openings. But yeah, that's it's tough when you're having that opening press conference and it's like, well, what in the world happened to one of the worst defensive performances we saw all season in the last game you coached? So that is tough.
It's not ideal. All right. Well, the first game of the weekend involves two of the guys that I mentioned, Bobby Slowick in Houston and Mike McDonald in Baltimore. The upstart young feisty Texans head to Baltimore to take on the Ravens, who beat them in week one. It feels like a million years ago. It's actually, you know, I think you're going to hear a lot of this week about how these aren't the same Texans. And of course they're not. Week one, it was a rookie quarterback. Just looking back at some of the stuff that happened in that game, some of the stats, you know, one thing that jumps out to me, he really struggled with pressure, with the Ravens pressure, that he was sacked five times, pressured 37% of the time. But he also had a very low, I think his lowest of the year, average depth of target. Since then, CJ Stroud has been slinging it. Back, it was 5.7 air yards per attempt, which way lower than his average, way lower than the rest of the year. So he is not the same guy that he was at that point. However, Shiel, I also think it bears mentioning that the Ravens were missing players. They were missing Marlon Humphrey. Mark Andrews didn't play. I think he's still probably not going to play in this game, although he might come back later. Notably, you know, they were still figuring out their offense. Like Lamar Jackson's not a rookie quarterback, but it was a totally new offense. There were, you know, I think still incorporating the wide receivers, some of whom also didn't play, by the way, in this game. So let's start there. Like, how much can you really glean from that matchup? Do you think anything applies? Oh, the Ravens won. I should mention that. It was tied. It was close to halftime, and then they pulled away in the second half.
I didn't really look at it, to be honest. Like these other games we're talking about, I was like, all right, I'm going to rewatch Bills Chiefs. I want to know what that looked like a month ago. But it, like you said, it was the first game of the season. And especially these teams, like the most remarkable thing about the Ravens, I thought this was going to be a transition year for them where it was like, all right, the offense is going to look up and down until maybe December. And maybe the last month of the season, they'll start coming on strong with Todd Monken and look good. And it just happened like way sooner than I expected. So you have one team who had two new coordinators, and then you had another team there, or I guess one new coordinator, and then the other team with the rookie quarterback. So I don't think it applies that much. I do though remember watching that game, and I was like, all right, the score is the score, but like, man, like the Texans don't look like they didn't get killed in that game. I think it was 7-6 at halftime, so they were kind of competitive. It's crazy. The first half of the first game of the season against like the Super Bowl favorite, they were competitive.
Yeah, I remember actually a defensive coach, not with either of these teams, asked me after this game if I had watched it. And I said, yes. And he wrote like, you know, I know they lost. He's like, but Stroud has got something. Like I would be nervous about him and his trajectory. And of course he was proven to be correct. Another important though difference in this game that I didn't mention is at the time Damian Pierce was still the number one, the lead back. And I think that's actually quite relevant, Shiel, headed into this game, because when I watch this Ravens defense and I think about it, which is the best in the NFL, I think we can now say that after Cleveland went down the way they did, I feel pretty comfortable saying Baltimore's the best defense in the NFL, a defense that, as we alluded to, has really handled these Shanahan type offenses in a way that we just have not seen. I do, however, think, and you saw this with the Rams game, you can run on them. In fact, they encourage it. You know, they play a lot of split safety, light boxes. They would rather you run the ball than pass. And I think, you know, Houston is a terrible, terrible running team this season, but they have gotten a little bit better as the season has gone along. I thought Singletary is coming off of probably his best performance of the season against Cleveland. I think they figured out something that, you know, he's much better running under center. He's not good running out of the gun. You saw that against Cleveland. Under center, he averaged 7.2 yards per carry with pretty reasonable success rate. And it pairs nicely with the CJ Stroud under center play action game. So I think the actual offense looks different from how it looked in week one. And the, you know, I'm not saying it'll give Baltimore trouble, but I think this is a better run game than it was in the early part of the year.
Yeah, I mean, he had, what, 2 20-plus-yard runs in that game last week against Cleveland, and they were nice. I mean, the one he's breaking tackles. I'm a little torn on, like, you know, should they try to run the ball or not? Because my one criticism of Slowik is, and he's been amazing this year, like, that was an unbelievable performance last week. But there have been times where I'm like, do you really, like, you're wasting some of these early down plays, and you have CJ Stroud, and he looks special. Like last week, I loved how aggressive they were. Early downs last week, Stroud was 13 for 15 for 227 yards. Like, I know you can't throw on every early down, but I wonder what their mindset is in this game, to your point. Like, they're, what, 30th in rushing DVOA, but I do think they're better at it now than they were early in the season. Do they say, hey, let's take our shots here. They've got a good offense. Let's sustain some of these drives. That's fine early on. If it's not working, I want you to pivot right away and be like, if we're going down, put the ball in this man's hands because he has been amazing. He can make high degree of difficulty throws. So maybe there'll be a little feeling out period early on. I do think the Shanahan guys like to just test stuff early, you know, try to set it up, come back in the third quarter with something different. So it wouldn't surprise me if we see something like that in this game.
It also feels like one where, and this kind of echoes what you said, if they're going to have success on offense, we'll get to the other side of the ball in a second. CJ Stroud is going to have to do something he has done this season, which is make plays out of structure, make plays under pressure, make plays on third down. Because this Ravens defense, what is, I would say, unique about them, San Francisco has some similar qualities. They're so strong up the spine with the linebackers and safeties. You can't attack voids in the middle of the field the way Houston, Green Bay, like you saw in the wild card round against, you know, the likes of Cleveland, which was pretty shocking, but in some ways structurally makes a little bit of sense. And then Dallas, like, that's not, I just don't see it, you know, like all the things that Houston did to Cleveland, the use of misdirection, the play action, the boots and stuff. I don't see that working the same way, certainly not as effectively against this very disciplined Ravens defense. It feels to me more like Stroud will have to be special and Nico Collins will have to make special plays against the Ravens corners.
Yeah, you're right. It's a totally different test. The Browns are like, line up and play. Here's what we do. We're going to press coverage and throw you into the and be physical and aggressive. And the Ravens, I think, to your point, is like, they can play any type of way defensively. It is like a feather in, you know, Mike McDonald's cap, that like, you can just switch how you play one week to the next. Every coverage you can imagine is on film for the Ravens. Every structure you can imagine is on film for the Ravens. So it's a totally different test. We all love Stroud because he pushes the ball downfield. Best defense in the NFL against deep passes, the Baltimore Ravens. So I'm with you. This is like, if the Texans are in this game, we're going to be like, oh, you know, the CJ Stroud hype is already at this level where I'm like, I don't know. Are there what? Two quarterbacks or three quarterbacks I want over him for the next 5 years. I mean, if they're in this game in the fourth quarter, if he's playing well, it's just going to reach another level.
Stroud and Collins, I'm so impressed by him. I don't know. I think he's really, really good.
Yes.
He's like a true X, you know, and Marlon Humphrey's been awesome. We'll see what kind of matchups they get. The Ravens typically play sides. But I think that, yeah, both him and Collins would have to like really take over on certain, and you know, it's possible. I'm not ruling it out. I think that Stroud is that good. On the other side, you know, this Houston defense, I think they've played better as the year has gone along. I think they're extremely good against the run. First in EPA per play, which actually shocked me. I didn't realize that they had finished that high, which is pretty remarkable. Fifth in success rate. You know, I think I talked a little bit earlier this week about how they made some, I thought, very intelligent adjustments against Cleveland. The Texans defense really struggled against play action all year, and Browns come into this game as this dynamic play action passing attack. But in the game, you saw a concerted effort to play the pass over the run by the Houston defense, very smart adjustments by D'Amico Ryans. And Cleveland couldn't punish them for it because Cleveland has a banged up offensive line. The run game was terrible by the end. That won't work against Baltimore. So I'm very interested in your thoughts as to like the sort of run pass balance from Baltimore's perspective, knowing that Houston is much better against the run than the pass. Do you see this for Todd Monken and the Ravens being a heavy Zay Flowers, OBJ, Bateman game? Do you see the play action pass working? Like, how would you approach this knowing their strengths and weaknesses?
I think the Ravens probably feel like they can run on anybody, you know, like, yes, it doesn't matter. And also, like, yeah, I was surprised by it too when the playoffs started and you're going through all the team strengths and weaknesses and you see that with the Texans. And I'm like, wait a minute, I just watched the Texans in week 18 and the Colts ran all over them. I mean, what did they have in that 227 yards or something? So I feel like the good rushing teams are like, we don't care about that. You like they're not so good where the Ravens are going to be afraid to do that. So the Ravens, it's funny, like their early down stuff, they're probably more pass heavy than people would expect. I think they're top 10. So they can win in different ways. They can run the ball. They can have Lamar in structure, which we've, you know, finally seen someone give him a chance this year to do that effectively in a competent offense. And then of course he can create. So I don't know. I feel like the Ravens can win this game in a lot of different ways offensively. I feel like they can move the ball. I mean, Houston will just line up and play. They're not a big disguise team or do 100 different things, but I think their hope is probably what their edge guys, right? Grenard and Anderson, yes. Like if you can pressure Lamar a little bit, force some negative plays, force some turnovers, I don't think it's going to be like a, hey, they're forcing him into three and outs and punting all day long. It's just about force enough negative plays to give Stroud and Nico Collins a chance to kind of steal it in the fourth quarter.
I think D'Amico Ryan blitzes him. I don't think like they go crazy with it, but, and I mentioned this, you know, I noticed this earlier, in the last game, and this is something he was very good at this in San Francisco. Like that defense never blitzed a lot, but do you remember, like, didn't it always feel like whenever Ryan sent the blitz, it was like perfectly timed, yes, and it always worked. Yeah. I feel similarly at times watching Houston. And I think Lamar, as incredible as a season as he's had, he got my vote for, you know, all pro and MVP and all of that. You can still get him with the blitz. You can still get him from time to time. So I think that's going to be key because, I'm with you. Like, I think as much as I've loved the improvement of this Houston defense, and I think guys like, you know, like Stingley, he might be able to lock down Zay Flowers, for example. There are just, and this is what I think is so difficult about this Ravens offense, they can do so many different things now at a high level, you know, and I think that's what's so unique about it. Like they still run the ball extremely well, but some games they'll get the wide receivers, the deep game going sometimes. Some games will be more about the quick passing game and the RPOs. They just have a lot of answers for the different things defenses do and a quarterback who is like in total control of the offense.
Yeah, and you mentioned the play action stuff with the Browns last week. Like, I think the Ravens are not high in terms of frequency, but when they do, I think Lamar's like top five or something in all the statistical categories in terms of efficiency. And so it's like, if you're loading up to stop that run game, if you have to stop the run game and then they hit you with that, they have various answers. And even the blitz, it's like, I'm with you, like create some chaos. And they're going to be downs where Lamar's just thriving in chaos. He's like, yes, sure, I'll run around and make a play 20 yards downfield. So they do present, you know, like you said, so many different problems. This version specifically, like I know there's a lot of comparisons, this version versus the 2019 Ravens. They're talking about it, you know, all week long or the last 2 weeks. This one just feels like more sustainable, more answers. We're not going to be coming out of this saying, oh, there was a blueprint to stop this version of the Ravens offense.
Well, I think about that 2019 team and how they came to their end in the postseason. And it was the Titans, right? Was it Titans or the Chargers?
Yeah, Titans. Yep,
Titans. Yeah, right. So the game plan, you know, taking away them, putting bodies in the middle of the field and forcing them to attack outside numbers. And they weren't good at it then, and that they didn't have the weapons. This year, now, Lamar has been, and I think I looked this up before the end of the season, so I haven't updated it, but on intermediate throws outside the numbers, he's been the best quarterback in the NFL. Wow. Like, he has like a QBR of like 99 or something. Zay Flowers eats there. They line him up way more outside than I thought they would. I bring this up only to say, to your point, like the difference between this team and the 2019 team is they're, you know, if you stop one thing, you're sacrificing something else, and they will punish you. Like, if Houston aggressively plays the pass on play action, they're going to run it on them, and they're going to run it on them well. If they play the run, they'll be able to attack those voids in the middle of the field. If they take away the middle of the field, they'll be able to throw outside. If they play tight, they'll be able to throw deep. They're just good at pretty much everything at the moment. So I think chaos is your best chance.
Yeah, they're, I mean, those edge, the Ravens still have that, like, I don't know if they're still doing the offensive tackle rotation for the playoffs or not, but they've been playing like multiple guys. So I don't know. Grenard was pretty impressive last week. Good. Anderson has been impressive. They need those guys to get home and, like we said, create some negative plays.
I've got Baltimore. I think the Texans offense can make it a little interesting just because I think that highly of CJ Stroud. I think it's a really good, well-coached team. I just think this Ravens team is a wagon. I imagine you're with me there.
I am. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like either Stroud or Love is still going to be playing a week from now. I'm not bold enough to pick either of them. I'm going to take the points probably on both of those. I think they can both be competitive, but yeah, I'm not bold enough to pick either one to win.
I think there's only one game that I'm genuinely curious to see who you pick straight up, and it's the last game. And yeah, we'll get to that one. All right. Packers Niners. Okay. I'm a little bit nervous to start off by saying the Packers defense is bad. They can't stop the run. They can't defend the middle of the field. They can't defend deep, because I said that before the Dallas game, Sheil. And yet, and then Dallas crapped the bed. But everything I said, everything everyone said, I'm certainly not unique in pointing out the deficiencies, these very specific deficiencies of the Packers defense, applies this week, and I do not think San Francisco will poop to bed the way Dallas did. I struggle to find answers on the, for Green Bay's defense against the San Francisco offense.
Yeah, I don't think they exist. I'm with you. Yeah, I don't think we have to be scared. You always have to be a little scared in the playoffs. I got some horrible playoff takes out there that should be deleted from the internet. Maybe I can ask some, not just playoff takes, a lot of takes, but playoffs specifically, these one-offs. But I'm with you. I mean, it's just it, on paper, it just looks like the worst possible matchup. Like you said, they're not good against the run. Like the 49ers could throw 15 passes in this game maybe and still put up over 30 points. All right, let's say they have a good game against the run. Well, that, like you said, the middle of the field, the Packers are terrible. I mean, where does Kyle Shanahan feast? That's where he feasts. What does Brock Purdy like to do? Why do we all say, oh, he's different than Jimmy G? Because he pushes the ball downfield. Where else are the Packers not good? When you push the ball downfield, I mean, it just, I did the same exercise you did. Like, I was going through it today. All right, you know, what can they do? You go through Purdy's stats, and I'm sure you've done this. I'm trying to look at it. Man, zone, one high, split safety, blitz, literally one or two.
Disguise is the only category. Thing. Only what, the disguise? Only thing okay. is disguise, okay. which, you know, Baltimore.
Yeah.
How what Green Bay does.
Yeah. And the turnover worthy plays. If you know, if you look at the, all right, maybe he'll give you a couple, but we're talking about like two plays out of what, you know, like 35 dropbacks in a game. So it's really tough. There's no solution for any team. No. You just have to be a really good defense who can push them around a little bit and create some negative plays. And I'm not falling for that for the Packers. I don't care what the last 3 weeks have looked like. I will not get that Bryce Young game against the Packers out of my head. I will not get Tommy Cutlets, you know, looking like Colin Kaepernick against Joe Barry out of my head. So yeah, I'm with you. I barely spent any time. I'm like, all right, there's no answer here. They just kind of got to get a little lucky and maybe Purdy will throw him a couple picks.
Here are three things that I think would need to happen for the Green Bay Packers defense to have success.
Okay.
One, a thunderstorm.
It might rain. It actually might rain. I did see this in some of the 49ers.
The Browns game.
Maybe some precipitation in Santa Clara. Okay, I like that.
Pretty struggled a little bit with that. Niners fans, I'm sure there's a rainstorm game where he played well. I don't know. I just that game is one that came, you know, struggled a little bit.
Yeah.
As many quarterbacks do. I'm not just, you know. Okay, so that's one thing. Rashawn Gary needs to go crazy against Colton Kivitz, which is the week. I mean, the funny thing about the Niners is, like, outside of Trent Williams, the offensive line actually is not that great. It doesn't matter because the ball comes out quick and guys are open so quickly and there's so many things that defenses have to worry about. However, third down, drop back situation, I do believe Rashawn Gary can beat Colton Kivitz. So, pressure. Number three, Packers have to blow out to a lead, because that changes the dynamics of all these Shanahan offenses, but I think it's really true of the San Francisco 49ers offense in general. We have seen Purdy struggle at times when trailing. Again, most quarterbacks, don't get mad at me, Niners fans. I know that most quarterbacks are worse than these. I'm just trying, we're trying to make a case here. It's not easy, but I think those are three things that would have to happen.
Yeah, I think that last one, especially with like the whole complimentary football thing, like shrink the number of possessions. You don't want, if the 49ers have 11 possessions, it's more likely that bad things are going to happen to you, Green Bay. If your offense, like that first drive the Packers had last week against Dallas, what was it, 7.5 minutes or something? Get a couple of those and make it an 8-possession game. Because in an 8-possession game, if you get one turnover, if you get one sack, if they have one bad penalty, you know what I mean? Like that randomness will, as 9.5-point underdogs, you want to invite the randomness. So I almost wonder, like, yeah, from a strategic perspective, if you're the Packers, is this just like a let's throw everything against the wall and play high variance? If we give up a 65-yard touchdown pass, who cares? Well, you know, we're probably going to give up a touchdown on that drive anyway. It's all about creating those like two drive-ending plays that give your offense a chance. Because I crazy things happen. Again, it's the playoffs. This might look stupid a week from now, but I just cannot envision a scenario where they are just like forcing the 49ers to punt three times in this game. It's just very hard for me to imagine.
Oh, the fourth thing is the kicker misses an extra point.
Two bad special teams here. Yeah.
Yeah, two bad special teams. So.
Yeah.
I think the third thing was about trailing. That's the best case for the Packers is their offense. I'll tell you this. If Matt LaFleur wins that coin toss, he is taking the ball to start. He is jumping out to a lead as he has done. And I have loved because their offense benefits from, first of all, their numbers are great from behind. So this is not an offense that has to have a lead. However, if they have a lead, it helps for a number of reasons. One of which is this offense with, which you certainly saw on display. You've seen on display really the last few weeks, but it was really very abundantly clear against Dallas. They're dynamic for a number of reasons, but they're especially hard to stop, Shield, when they can threaten the run. And Dallas got absolutely toasted because of it. The extremely high under center play action rates. Aaron Jones looks absolutely fantastic right now running the football. Since he's come back, he has looked so good running and especially from under center. And that's, I think, a pretty, so the play action aspect of it. But I do think that they can move the ball on San Francisco using that formula.
I agree. I think neither of us are generally we don't have our run the damn ball hats on, you and I, unless you've changed a lot since we last spoke on the pod, but I'm with you here. I mean, Aaron Jones has been awesome. I mean, he's, I think, success rate top five among all backs in the NFL. Like if you look at their overall rushing numbers, you're like, all right, they're mediocre, but Jones hasn't been healthy for the whole season. He missed what, 6 or 7 games. When he's healthy, they can run the ball, and I do think that has to be part of the formula here. Like I said, they almost, like, you don't want to, this isn't about explosive plays, in my opinion, for them. Like, if you don't have a lot of explosive plays, that's okay. Can you sustain drives? Can you, again, shrink the number of possessions that the 49ers have? So it all starts with run game, easy completions, play action. That 49ers defense is tough. I mean, you talked about it with Baltimore. They take away the middle of the field better than any defense in the NFL because Fred Warner's an alien. I don't know that it's, more complicated than that. But so it might be different types of throws. But, man, watching Love last week and just like it. What I love is it doesn't have to be perfect for him. You know what I mean? Like give up a little pressure here. He's got that little bounce. He's not panicking. He doesn't take a lot of sacks. I do give them a chance to put together a very strong offensive performance, even though this is a good Niners defense.
Yeah, they actually have a statistical advantage in the run game. This has been this case with the San Francisco 49ers all year. I actually checked to I just kept tightening it to more recently, and it hasn't gotten better. In fact, over the last month of the season, 31st in success rate, 30th in EPA per play. Now, a lot of that was the absence of Eric Armstead, who I believe will likely be back for this game. So that helps. But if you can get them into third and short in particular, or anything in short, you can run on them. You can run them up the gut. I think this Green Bay offense is poised to do so. I also like the matchup, however, not just because it's a good running team against a team that struggled against that, because stop me if this is like too galaxy brained, but I kind of love I don't know if you saw, it was a take on Speak for Yourself, I think is the name of the show, where Emmanuel Acho was saying how it's better to have to not have too many draft picks because you might miss on all of them versus one or something. I'm not trying to take shots or anything. I feel like that might be kind of parallel what I'm about to say, but here's what I'm about to say. I like this Green Bay passing group because there isn't a number one. Now, it would be great if they had a number one. I'm not saying that they'd be worse if they had Davante Adams. It would clearly be better than they have Davante Adams. However, if they had Davante Adams and no one else, which was, you know, the case at points, I think San Francisco could shut them down because I think Tavarius Ward has that ability. He's been fantastic this year. There are other weaknesses. Ambry Thomas, I think Lenoir can be had. The fact that Green Bay has so many different pass catchers and they're really, like, each one, a different one goes off, allows them to play matchup football, I think, in a way that is very important against this San Francisco secondary.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think it's like different from last week. Last week they were playing two tight ends. Like, this is like, no, you want the 49ers in nickel. And, you know, like you said, it's not that any of them are terrible players, but it's like you're looking for a weakness on the defense. And it's all right, their corners can be had a little bit aside from Ward, who's terrific. So, yeah, it could be Dobbs. It could be Wicks. I swear it took me till like week 15 to, all right, they all are the same to me. I don't know who's who. It would be easier for me personally if it was like Davante Adams and three other players, then I could be like, all right, I can recognize them. Now I just get confused. It's almost like they have the same guy, and I know they have different playing styles, but I'm getting older. I get confused when I watch these games. You know, I'm turning into my dad, I guess.
It's legitimately confusing because every game it's a different one. It's like, this is a Jaden Reed game. This is a Dontavian Wicks game. Last week was Dobbs went crazy. Could have used that in my fantasy playoffs, Romeo Dobbs, but not bitter about that by any means. I think it presents unique challenges for defenses, and I think for this defense in particular. I think this Green Bay offense, I think the offensive line is playing really well. They're healthier. I think they've got a good shot in this one. I don't think it'll be enough. I still got San Francisco. But I don't know what the spread is. I'm sure, let me guess, like 6.5, 7 maybe?
Higher.
I don't know.
Keep going.
Really? Okay. Well, yeah. I'm taking Green Bay in that regard to cover, but I'm taking San Francisco to win this game, Shiel.
Yeah, no, it's 9.5. So it's, I know, it's up there. No respect for that Packers offense. This is one of those where, like we're saying, you could certainly see a scenario where the 49ers have like 7 possessions and score 6 touchdowns. I mean, we can all see something like that. But yeah, I'm not willing to bet against, like, I've just, Jordan Love, he's been like the Kapadia personal, like, star of the season. Like, oh my gosh, I love to watch this man play. Like, I want, you know what? You know, in our world, you got to like claim people early, you know, to be like, no, this is my guy. You know, no, I liked him before you did. You know, it's like, it's one of those. I was trying to get in real early on Jordan Love. So I don't know if I did. I'm sure someone out there got in on him.
Well, he ripped up your Eagles. So you had an early look at him.
He did. I do remember watching that film and I'm like, oh, this guy. I mean, just his arm is so loose where he's just like bouncing around and then all of a sudden throws a dart. So yeah, he's like, you know, top 3 most fun quarterback in the NFL for me right now.
You know that expression, it's funny because of his name, Jordan Love, it's just, the name is constantly stumbling into jokes and TV chyrons. But anyways, the expression, love like you've never been hurt, dance like nobody's watching. I don't know, I'm getting it wrong. Anyways, he plays quarterback like he's never failed to me. That's how I feel. Like, you know, like he plays like a 25-year-old. Like, he's just like, I'll try this. Back foot, why not? Let's see. That's a window I'll fit it into. And I love watching it. It is so fun.
It's amazing. They are like a house money team. You know, you don't know when you're going to get back to the divisional round. They didn't expect, you know, the old, what's the cliche? Every, you know, talking like they don't know what they don't know, you know?
Yes.
They're just still going out there, you know? So yeah, I actually think it applies. So I'm not making fun of you if you're someone who's, you know, said that.
Yeah, it's like one of these like signs, you know. All right, let's take a quick break, come back and talk about the other games.
Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? Two words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app, it's an empire. 21 and older must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited.
Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. Or in Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.org. West Virginia, visit 1800gambler.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans. Massachusetts, if you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Bucks Lions, another rematch. Look at all these rematches. They played in week 6. The Lions won 20-6. Bucks are such a weird team this year. They're so up and down, different. The offense in particular was so like all over the place. I think just looking back my notes from this game, what jumps out was, you know, a few things that jumped out. The Lions defense, I don't know how they held them to 6 points, because at this point they weren't that great, but it was not a very good Baker Mayfield game. I think that was part of it. Jared Goff was good in this game, ran the ball well. St. Brown, he was hitting him against the Bucks' usual blitz with success. He's been well. That's probably the where we start, because that's kind of like the biggest question, I think, for Detroit going into this is kind of Jared Goff versus the blitz in general. Can he do what your boy Jalen Hurts could not do, which is find an open receiver when Todd Bowles sends extra pressure? He did, and I think he will.
Yeah, I think he will too. I mean, all the numbers from the season, I think he's fifth in success rate against the blitz. I think it helps when you've played like Bowles earlier in the season. I mean, Bowles, like, he changes some stuff up, but I think that's a unique experience if you're facing that for the first time. So I think he's good against the blitz. He threw for what, over 300 in that game earlier in the season. So I like the Lions. I mean, Lions offense, especially at home, I feel like they're good all against almost any team. That Bucks defense, like, you're right. The Bucks, like, I don't know what to make of the Bucks. Are the Bucks going to be playing in the NFC Championship? Like, the Bucks are a smaller favorite than the Packers and then the Texans. Is it going to be one of those weird seasons? I don't think so. I think the Lions will be able to move the ball on them.
I actually think the Bucks have a decent case on offense. We'll get to that in a second. Defensively, however, they still have good players, and I think, you know, like, there's real strengths on this team. Obviously, safety, Winfield Jr. is amazing this year. Still a good linebacker duo group, really. And then up front, definitely found something in Kalijah Kancey, Barrett, Diaby. But I do think that they are weak in ways that Detroit can really exploit. Not running the ball. Although Detroit is one, Detroit's kind of like Baltimore, like where they're so good running the ball, even though they're playing a very good rushing defense in Tampa, I still think that they'll be able to run the ball. So I will say that. However, I think there's like a lot of weaknesses. When I was doing my Eagles Bucks prep, I was like, oh, they're bad at this, they're bad at this. And then at the end, I was like, but does any of it matter against the Eagles? Like one of the things that jumped out was like, the Bucks allow the most, like they're terrible in deep passes. They allow a ton of go balls. They're really bad, you know, defending. Let's see. I have all these splits. Yeah, there's a lot of things that they're bad at. Here's one that I really think actually is very important in this game and was one of the ones where I found it and I was like, this does not matter at all against Philadelphia. So against offenses that use motion, the Bucks are 32nd in yards per play.
Wow.
They are allow 9.3 yards per pass, which is the most in the NFL. That did not matter against the Philadelphia Eagles.
What's motion? Yeah, I don't. Can you define that? I'm not familiar.
But against these Detroit Lions, Shiel, who of course use a ton of motion and use it well, I think it'll prove to be quite an issue.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good one. Like you said, motion. Blitz against zone. Jared Goff is very good. RPO stuff. I think they are good against the run, but I think he can get the linebackers with, you know, Devin White specifically with the RPO stuff and attacking the middle of the field. And so I think it's a good matchup. Now, I will say there was a stretch in that Lions Rams game in the second half. Don't get me wrong. Don't get mad, Lions fans. Goff played well overall, but there was like that three series stretch where he had like a backwards pass. He, you know, Goff like stumbled on himself and took a sack. On third down, he fired one like into the stands for Josh Reynolds. And I'm like, oh man, this is three possessions in a row in a close game. So I think that's what you're looking for. The Bucks are very aggressive. Like you said, they've got very good players. Like Winfield is a safety who can kind of wreck a game with his, you know, blitzing or creating turnovers or whatever. So they can make stuff happen where, you know, you look up all of a sudden, you're like, oh, Lions have three turnovers. And I'm like, no, this is a fluky game. Their success rate is good. And it's like, well, it doesn't matter, you know, because they might lose here if they,
Their success rate is good.
What? They're turning the ball over. So yeah, I will stay.
Oh, sorry. You don't sound like that. I don't know why. And I, of all people, should not be allowed to do a nerd impression ever. We know the story with Jared. It's pressure, but the question is whether they can get. But it's notable. So Jared Goff, you know, kept clean, best quarterback in football this year. 79 QBR pressure that drops to 12, which is bottom 10. What I think is notable, however, it's really about that four-man rush working. And I don't think the Bucks' four-man rush is great. I think this Detroit Lions offense line is also playing very well. And I'm sorry to keep going back to the Eagles, but like not only is Jared Goff, you know, we can say like he's been good against the Blitz this year. Well, he's good against the Blitz because they have a plan. Right. And they have skill players in St. Brown in particular and Laporta, who he is very good at targeting when blitzed, and they're very good at getting yards after the catch when blitzed. Yeah. So I think that Ben Johnson is going to come in with a much better plan. It feels redundant because really all I have to say is a plan for the blitz.
Yeah, that's
a plan, unlike Philadelphia. Yeah.
That area in between like those yard, the numbers, I think they're called. There's that area where you are allowed to throw the football and, you know, specifically against the blitz. That's not a bad place to go with it. Some teams are not allowed to throw there, which would explain the Eagles last week.
It's crazy that you're not allowed. It's like, who made that rule? It's like,
yeah, I don't know. There should be more reporting on that. I agree.
Okay. So Bucks fans, if you're upset listening to that, I actually think your offense could have some success. Provided that you don't try to run the ball on early downs, that is how you don't win against Detroit, because you suck at it. And Detroit is good in run defense, Shiel, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, they're the best, I think, right? First in rushing DVO. And that the Bucks have, they're around middle of the pack. Like they do waste plays, but I will give them credit. Last week, maybe they just looked at that Eagles defense. Maybe Baker was just checking at the line. He's like, I'm due for a contract.
That's have you James seen Bradbury. These linebackers? We're not running. I'm throwing right at check. 24.
Do the hand signal.
Try to tackle. Like, really?
Yeah. So they came out throwing. They threw the ball on early downs, and they should throw the ball on early downs here. I think there's stuff that you're right. Tampa has some stuff here that they can, you know, expose on that Lions defense. They're a big play action team. Lions are 31st in success rate against play action. They can be certainly be had there. They're not good against deep passes. I think in that first game, Baker Mayfield, like his average throw went like 12 yards. I mean, he was just chucking it.
Yeah, he was missing.
Maybe he had these numbers. Yeah, he was missing. He was trying to chuck it downfield. So I think there are like openings for them. This Lions defense, I will not fully believe in. It feels like unless Aiden Hutchinson's taken over, unless their front's taking over, if you give the quarterback time, they will give up plays.
I mean, Kendall Vildor has to defend someone, and not to be mean, but whoever it is, they should throw it to. The Lions defense, like, they're good up front, and it's behind them that's the problem. I think for Tampa, the question is just kind of like what, not level of aggression run pass, but in terms of pushing the ball downfield. Because sometimes that deep pass, it's been off. And to Baker's credit, he threw a perfect ball to Mike Evans, who dropped it against Philadelphia.
Yeah, they had a lot of drops, yeah.
Yeah, but I think with Detroit, you know, a big reason why Baker Mayfield has been better this year and it's been sort of a renaissance for him is he is getting the ball out quickly. He is not taking as many sacks. And they've been really good in that, like, 0 to 10-yard range. He has players who get open and like Chris Godwin, for example, and Rashad White, who's a great check down option. I think that'll work against Detroit versus passes under 10 yards. They're 29th in success rate. They've allowed they're 25th in EPA when people throw to running backs. So if I'm Tampa and you know, like just thinking also about complementary football and keeping our the Lions offense off the field, I really think you can string together some real dink and dunk drives against this Lions defense.
Yeah, I mean, the Lions are favorites, but if Baker's throwing for over 300 and they're, I mean, every game, even what was it, week 18, was it, where the Lions, it was like, all right, I think they had this game against the Vikings. And then it's like, oh, Jordan Addison, 65-yard touchdown. It's like, no, that's like the one thing you cannot allow to happen right here. And that's happened over and over again with this Lions team. Even though overall they look like a mediocre unit, they're not a unit to be trusted. There's probably, like, you know, maybe the Ravens are the only unit to be trusted on defense, given what we saw with the Browns. But the Lions, certainly, their pass defense is not to be trusted.
I've still got Detroit. I think they're the better team. Yeah.
Yeah, I said all that. I think Detroit wins by double digits. Another bad take that we will delete from this podcast potentially after Sunday.
You're actually good doing that because Bucks fans aren't vindictive. I want to make a personal ranking of the fan bases who love.
Oh, I would love to read this. You don't have to make it public. Just send it to me. I want to see if I agree or don't disagree.
Bucks fans are, in my experience, tend to be pretty friendly. Yeah, we'll see. I think part of the reason also, and this is kind of the final thing before we get to the last game, that I like Detroit is I trust their coaching staff not to F it up. Like, you know, and I was like, for example, like we said we can run on them, but I don't think they're going to run into a brick wall. Like, they're, you know, this is an offense that will play matchup football, and I think Ben Johnson will do a good job of identifying all the, you know, the various weaknesses in the Bucs defense and exploiting them. And then I think Dan Campbell he's not going to turtle up being the favorite, which is why I love the dude.
That was a huge factor in Lions Rams. I mean, I went on a big rant on it. Yeah. I mean, that was, if McVay coaches that game like Campbell coaches, the Rams might still be playing right now, honestly.
McVay was my woof. McVay, the game manager, was my woof of the woof of the week. And yeah, I agree. And that's why, even when Dan Campbell was slightly insane going for two again, as it pushed out farther and farther, I still loved it because I was like, this dude is always going to do him. And it's why I'm still confident in them. Okay, Chiefs Bills. So this is, I think, the closest, certainly, I think last I saw, Chiefs were favored by 2.5. Bills were favored by 2.5.
Bills.
In Buffalo, though. So
yes.
It's basically a pick 'em. So this is a rematch of a lot of times. Most recently in week 14, the infamous Kadarius Toney game. I think it'll always be remembered that way. They got to start with some kind of troll play. If I'm Buffalo, I don't know how you get someone to lateral it to a receiver. So big takeaway from that game, Sheil, was it was a big James Cook game. This was after, I think not long after Joe Brady took over offensive play calling, and you start seeing more of this emphasis on using both running the football and using James Cook as a pass catcher. The Chiefs did not have Isaiah Pacheco in this game, which I think is pretty significant. See, running backs do matter. We start off by talking about the two running backs. I think there's a big difference when they have Pacheco, when they don't. Cook's emphasis also made a difference. I thought the way that Steve Spagnuolo played Allen was interesting in this game. Despite the fact that they ran and threw the running back more, the Chiefs played less base defense than usually. They usually play a lot of base. They were actually in dime a fair amount. Do you see some commonalities? I think I was looking back at sort of some of the other games, these epic matchups. Spagnuolo, his approach to playing Josh Allen, he does tend to play the pass pretty heavily. He will blitz, which is interesting, and I think is going to be an interesting question mark in this one. But yeah, so it was pretty different. I don't know. And then of course, since then, and this is maybe we should start here. The Chiefs have suffered, or Bills have suffered rather, yet more injuries on their defense. We are taping this on Wednesday, and I just checked who was day-to-day. Taron Johnson is in concussion protocol. That is huge to me in this game because he has been awesome this season. Russell Douglas with the knee, Christian Benford with the knee. I think they'll play. Davis, I think, will come back. Taylor Rapp, calf injury. He didn't play in the last round. And then Tyrell Dodson, who is the linebacker. And then Bernard, who it looked like was like done at the end of the game. I read that now he's day to day. So I don't know who's going to play. And I think, let's start here. Those, not to be a huge cop out, but I think those injuries might end up determining how I feel about this game because those are very significant players, particularly against this iteration of the Chiefs offense and where they like to attack.
Yeah, and I think it will determine how Sean McDermott wants to play this game. I mean, I think in his perfect world, if he had his guys, like, remember, he took over the play calling from Leslie Frazier. Like, it was for moments like this in the playoffs. I mean, their defense has not performed in the playoffs. So I think games like this, he felt like, I can come up with a creative game plan. I can come up with wrinkles and call them at the right time against the elite quarterbacks in the NFL. Like, I really think that move was about games like this. But now you look at it and it's like that was such a costly win for them against Pittsburgh. They just lost so many guys in the second half there that now I almost wonder if McDermott just comes into this game and says, you know what, let's just make the Chiefs earn it. Let's play that defense that I personally hate that has taken over the league with two high safeties and force them to move up. This isn't the defense I grew up with, but I think this might be the right time to play it because that Chiefs offense has shown us time and again, like can they string together 8 or 9 plays without Jawan Taylor getting a penalty, without Marquez Valdes-Scantling dropping the football, without somebody else, you know, reading the coverage differently than Patrick Mahomes? Like they've just made those mistakes over and over and over again that I do feel like if the Bills go into this shorthanded, it's sort of like vanilla, basic game plan. Let's not get beat over the top and let's see what happens here. Let's see if our front four can get home, you know, Gregory Rousseau, those guys against some of those Chiefs offensive tackles, because I just don't know that he's going to be willing to be creative with, you know, disguising coverages and blitzes when these are, I mean, so it's like linebacker and corner. I mean, they are decimated. We're not talking about like the third guy. I mean, they could potentially be on guys like 5 and 6 in this game. So I don't know. That was one thought I had. Again, we don't know who's going to play, but if they are shorthanded, I wonder if that's the approach.
I think that McDermott, and again, this is, like you said, personnel is going to go a long way. He might do something similar to not what he did a fair amount against Dallas, which was basically dare you to run the ball. You talked about them playing too high and then either blitz the run, drop a safety into the box at the last minute. I think we might see a lot of later movement oriented towards stopping the run, but I think he's going to present looks that invite the run. And as so often is the case with the Chiefs, you know, will they take it? I think they will. So Pacheco could end up being a difference in this game. The other thing I think noting from week 14 is this was around the time when they realized the offense has to go through Rashee Rice and Kelce, but you've seen Rice's importance grow and grow and grow, culminating most recently in this playoff performance where he was so clearly the dude. And not just in terms of target share, but the way they used him has changed over the course of the season against Miami, very embattled, injured defense of their own, just destroying them with crossing routes, getting the ball in his hands in space. This is the way. Like, it's so obviously the right thing for them to do. It's been the right thing. Yeah, every time. I joked about this on Twitter, I think, but every time they throw it to someone other than Rashee Rice, bad happens. So, so if you're Buffalo, Sheil, I think your game plan from the passing perspective, you just got to stop Rashee Rice. That's what I would, you know, that's the biggest concern.
Yeah, I think Rice and Kelce, I think 20 targets combined in that first game. I mean, this is the way the Chiefs, like, I don't know if this is the way the Chiefs want to play. Probably not. It's sort of like this is the way they have to play right now. I mean, Patrick Mahomes, his average pass is going, what, six yards downfield. Like, they have turned into a throw the ball short, yards after the catch, methodical. They're middle of the pack in every explosive play category. Like, they cannot make plays downfield. Now watch, they'll come out and have, you know, six bombs to Marquez Valdes-Scantling. They try. They're there sometimes where you look up and you go, he's open. That throw looks good. Oop, like you said, something bad happened there. But they have to kind of have that methodical approach. So I thought they ran the ball pretty well in that first game against them in week 14. So whether it's running the football, whether it's the methodical passing game, and yeah, Rice and Kelce. Kelsey's sort of like the when Mahomes is running around out of structure or, you know, make a play mode, that's Kelce. And you're right, get Rice on the move and let him make plays. It sounds simple, but that's what they got to do. Nobody else is reliable.
It's going to be a hell of a lot harder for them if they don't have Taron Johnson or the linebackers, because they've really found something with Rice on the in-breaking stuff. And if they've got backups in the middle of the field, that will go a long way towards helping Kansas City there. The other side is in some ways more of the strength on strength matchup, which is crazy to say about a Patrick Mahomes quarterback team, but the Chiefs defense has been phenomenal. They're coming off of a very strong performance against a not injured Miami offense. It's not the same way their defense was. And they're playing a Bills team that has gone through something of a bit of an offensive evolution. They're changing. They're kind of the last game, you know, was interesting. You saw, I thought Khalil Shakir was kind of his big breakout game. They still, they'll still, I think, lean heavily on James Cook in this one. I think for Steve Spagnuolo, it's different. Whereas with, you know, the Chiefs, it's really like, okay, how do you shut down these two players, right? That's not how you approach the Bills anymore, because they really are sort of agnostic about targets. It comes down to, how do you approach Josh Allen? Do you blitz him? Do you spy him? How can you try to get him to make a mistake? How do you think Spagnuolo, you know, I said this at the beginning, he's approached it in different ways with their different matchups. What do you think he will do versus this version of Josh Allen?
Yeah, they're kind of in that Ravens mold where they have the ability to do different things. They don't just do one thing. They can disguise. They can play zone. They can play man. They can blitz. He's just an aggressive guy. So it's not like, you know, sit back and make him move the ball downfield. And watching that, I was rewatching that first game today, and like, I thought they did a good job. I mean, Allen is always going to make plays, but he held the ball in that game, I think, on average, like 3.3 seconds. Like, his head was spinning a little bit back there. Like, they were doing stuff from a cover standpoint to confuse him, to make him hold on to the football. And part of it is just, you know, that they've got good cover corners. Their pass defense has been so good against those Bills weapons. So I hate to just be like, oh, you know, it's not just one thing, but I do feel like they have different options. One thing I did say, when they played zone in that game, it was Josh Allen's worst success rate against zone in any game this entire season. So, and it wasn't that they just played zone or played a high percentage, like they played both, but on those snaps specifically. So like just the rotation stuff, the, hey, what is this? What am I looking at? The combo coverages, all that stuff is a good formula against the Bills. And it's like, I do think the narrative about Joe Brady and the offense, like statistically, they've been worse. They've just flat out been worse with Joe Brady than Ken Dorsey. I'm not telling you like the numbers always tell the whole story, but all the efficiency metrics you look at, they haven't been as good. And so like the Bills, the story of the Bills offense is when they don't do stupid stuff, they are one of the best in the NFL. But they have a tendency to do some stupid stuff that leaves you sitting there going, well, what are they doing?
I think it's cutting down on the stupid stuff, which Josh Allen in the, was it week 17 or no, it was the Miami game where he threw some of his, so it's not like, oh, Joe Brady's gotten him to stop. No, it's just, it's random. He right. is who he is. I also think, yes, the offense efficiency wise hasn't been better. It's been much more about the defense that they were able to rip off the win streak to me and the turnovers. However, and this is, again, I know I already mentioned this, but I don't think it can be emphasized enough. Josh Allen's willingness to use his legs as the season goes on in those key moments is so pivotal in these big games. Which is why, by the way, I think you're right, but the Chiefs playing zone, I think, is you do not want to turn your back on eyes Josh on him, Allen. Yeah. You got to keep eye. And even if you have one eyes on him, he's going to run you over half the time. But, and this is one thing I do like about the Chiefs versus like some of these other linebacking group. They got some thumpers up in the middle. They're a very physical defense to begin with. The corners, you know, get a lot of attention for that. But I think it starts up front with Jones and Karlaftis. The linebackers are really physical. The secondary plays with a level of, I mean, it's funny, Shield, to think even just like 2 years ago, this Chiefs defense really struggled with tackling. This was a big issue against the Bengals in some of these playoff games, just the inability to tackle Jamar Chase, missed tackles. And I think when we look back at the rebuild of this defense using the resources from the Hill pick and some of the draft picks and whatever in free agency, it has so clearly been with an eye towards physicality and tackling some of the replacements that they've made, some of the players that they've targeted. And I think in a game like this, that physicality could be the difference.
Yeah, you nailed it with Allen in the run game. I mean, not only the scrambling, they were doing design stuff with him in this game in week 14. I mean, the Bills have been basically playing playoff games for like six straight weeks now. So I guess they were like, all right, you know, forget about saving him until the playoffs. Because, yeah, they were using him that way in that game. And the Chiefs, you know, they can be had a little. Now, some of it's what you said, like they invite. Sometimes we'll invite teams to run the football, they haven't consistently stopped the run here. So do the Bills come out and is it sort of that mentality of our defense isn't going to be able to hold up today. Let's again string together these long drives. Is it some of that game plan like they had against the Cowboys where, you know, they're just running the football with multiple guys and Josh Allen? Because that Bills offensive line, I mean, what is it? The only one in the NFL where every guy's like started, entire season or something like that.
They're
good and they're healthy and they've all been, when you're playing together that often and you know, all right, this is the angle on this play because the line, like they can do all that stuff at a very high level. So yeah, I think it should be a big James Cook game. I mean, he was big for them as a receiver in that first matchup. They used him in an amazing way, which they haven't totally gotten back to, which was a little bit puzzling. I thought that was the start of something, but.
Oh, he had the wheel route touchdown in this game where they motioned. Yeah, that was.
Yeah, he had two nice ones downfield. So as a receiver and a rusher, it could be a big James Cook game.
It's Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes. So naturally we're like, which team's going to run the ball better? Pacheco, James Cook. I reserve the right to change my pick pending the injury status of several Bills defensive players. Right now, though, because of that, and it is really because of that injury, those injuries that I'm leaning Chiefs in this one. I think this Chiefs offense, which we talked about, they're not explosive. I did a sort of bonus pod with Mitch Schwartz about this. Because they're not explosive, they can't afford mistakes the way they could before. However, I think that they will be able to run the ball. I think they've figured out how to best optimize Rashee Rice. And by the way, and this is maybe the final piece, we talk about Josh Allen's legs. Patrick Mahomes' legs are also a massive factor in January football. And he has run this year more than ever before. And in a game like this, he will run. And they're very different runners. I don't think stylistically you could have two more different rushing quarterbacks than Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes. It's like comparing a Josh Allen is the monster truck. I don't even know what kind of car Mahomes is. It's like a jalopy that like you're like, how is this car running? And then it always it like beats the other car. I don't know. It's rickety, whatever it is.
I think he's tiptoeing. Yeah, it's very soft. It's like he doesn't want to wake someone up in the house when he's running. And Josh Allen is like, I'm bursting through this door and I'm coming to get everything.
I think as a defensive player, it's more infuriating when it's because if it's Josh Allen, you're like, yeah, that guy's much bigger.
Yeah, what am I going to do?
When Patrick Mahomes always gets like 13 yards when he needs 12, it's absolutely infuriating as he like jauntily dances by you. Mahomes' legs will be big in this one. I've got the Chiefs. Who do you got?
I just have to stick to like previous takes on this. I have not bought this Chiefs offense. I'm like, they're dead, bury them. And now I'm terrified that they're going to be playing in the Super Bowl in 2 weeks, but I'm just going to stick with that. And I was saying, don't bury the Bills yet. They can still do it. And so I don't feel great. Mahomes as an underdog has just been like lights out. When I think he's been an underdog 10 times and his team has won, not just covered, won 7 times. And those Bills injuries terrify me. A lot of things here terrify me, but I don't know. Maybe it's just a weird year where the Bills were supposed to be dead and they're finally going to break through and get to the Super Bowl. So I'll stick with Buffalo. I'm glad we're not picking the same team.
This was the one I thought we might diverge on. You didn't cowardly preface it like I did with the injury. You got to do the injury thing. You got to be like, well, it totally depends on who's healthy for this game. But I mean it. I'm not lying. Yeah. I actually like Taron Johnson. I voted for him all pro, man.
It's been awesome.
Really really good.
Especially on the in breaking. Yeah, the slot stuff, the in breaking stuff, no doubt.
I'm telling you. All right, Chiel, you're fantastic. As I mentioned at the top, you guys can check out Chiel's work on the Ringer NFL show, the Philly special. If you're a Cowboys fan and you want to feel better about your team, go listen to that. I'm sure it's very funny right now. And also on Twitter at you're just Chiel Kapadia, right? Chiel Kapadia. You can check this podcast out on YouTube if you're listening and you haven't already. Give it a subscribe. And I mentioned this. We're doing a live show from Las Vegas. Chiel, you should come if you're out there.
Yeah.
Thursday, we did a live show in Seattle once. So it was really fun. This one is with Dominique Foxworth, Bill Barnwell, Kevin Clark, playing the hits. Check out, you can buy tickets at bit.ly/MinaFox. bit.ly/MinaFox. I got that right. There will be food and merch, which is included in the cost. All right. Thank you, as always, to the fine folks at Omaha, Christian Sobecki, Owen Saylor, Anthony Jimenez, and I will see you guys next week.
Hey. 10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.